Welcome to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallblom. For May, we'll catch up on special plans for the UNI Suzuki School's annual spring concert. We'll learn about the WCF Symphony's upcoming 2016-17 innovative season. We'll hear about the Red Cedar Chamber Music's Changing of the Guard. We'll sing the praises of the Des Moines Metro Opera's Summer Festival lineup. We'll delve into the 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition. And we'll applaud as Hancher finally has a performing arts center to call home. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Thanks for joining us.
I just can't believe how beautiful this building is. It's going to be one of the finest in the country.
Chuck Swanson, Hancher's executive director. After the devastating floods of 2008, the years of preparation, working with architects, construction workers, and planning their new season will all pay off. On June 1st, the Hancher staff will finally get the keys to their new 1,800-seat state-of-the-art Performing Arts Center. Before their official red carpet opening on September 24th, the Hancher team will be practicing to make sure that everything is working and up to snuff. Their main goal, though, is to make everyone feel welcome.
We want Hancher to be for everybody. We want everybody to get a taste of the new building. So we're going to open with open houses. That will be September 9th and 11th. There will be a ribbon cutting at 3 o'clock on the 9th, and then right after that, we're going to open those doors. And we want everybody to come in and just see every nook and cranny of that building, be able to go backstage, test out the dressing rooms, walk on stage, really get a feel for this new Hancher. And then on the 16th of September, we're going to have a free outdoor concert because we want everybody to take part in this celebration. And so Trombone Shorty, who is a favorite of so many people, he is from New Orleans. He will perform with his band and then Preservation Hall Jazz Band that opened Hancher, 44 years ago, back in 1972. They are also going to perform. So it will be September 16th, a night that nobody wants to miss. And then September 24th, that's going to be our gala opening. It was so hard for so long to keep this a secret because I have been just so excited about this. Steve Martin and Martin Short and Steve Martin's Steep Canyon Rangers. Black tie optional, a big night, September 24th. So they're going to help open our new Hancher. And of course, Broadway is back. Everybody loves the Broadway shows. So Book of Mormon will be, I think it's a 9 Tony Award winner. The creators of South Park are the ones who created Book of Mormon. That will be our first Broadway show ever in the new Hancher. And then Sound of Music, a new touring production. And I was fortunate enough to see that. And I've never heard voices like that before. And then Mamma Mia, that's a favorite of everybody's. And this is the last touring season. So we thought we'd better get Mamma Mia in there. And then some of the biggest names in classical music, Renee Fleming, soprano solo recital. Emmanuel Axe will be playing our brand new concert grand piano that he helped to select. That will be a concert in December and a very special evening. The Cleveland Orchestra, they'll be performing in January. The Ying Quartet, which is a favorite of ours with Billy Childs. Yo-Yo Ma, solo cello. That will be an exquisite evening. And then the Boston Pops, we're going to bring them back. It will be a night of George Gershwin. Then we have a landmark event, just continues our special relationship with the Joffrey Ballet. We are a commissioner, and we're going to help with the birth and the creation of a brand new Joffrey Nutcracker. We were the ones who commissioned the Nutcracker, the original one, back in 1987. And so this is a new Nutcracker, choreographed by probably the hottest choreographer in the world, the most sought after. His name is Christopher Wilden, American on Paris. He directed and choreographed that, won several Tonys on Broadway. The story is written by Brian Selznick, who is the creator of many children's books. He's very famous. And it's a rock star team in terms of sets and costumes and lights and projection. We are actually going to welcome the production team, I think it's the second week in November. They're going to work in our new hall, and then the dancers will arrive just prior to Thanksgiving. We will, of course, have several rehearsals. Orchestra Iowa will be providing the live music. And then we're going to have what we're calling preview performances the first weekend in December. And we just are so excited about the fact that Hancher and the University of Iowa are helping with the birth of this new Nutcracker, that I'm sure this will have a great, great run. There are several other commissions in the season. There's a piece called The Migration. This is a piece by Steppe Africa, and it's based on paintings by the artist Jacob Lawrence. Maya Beiser on cello, a solo cello performance, and she will be doing a piece that's called The Day, and it's actually written by a U of I alumni, David Lang. We're also bringing back Tomas Kubinek with Orchestra Iowa. This is a piece called Pomp, Brass, and Lunacy, and it's really taking Tomas, who is this great comedian, he's Czech, kind of an old world charm, mixing his humor and comic elements with a full evening with Orchestra Iowa. And we're adding Wycliffe Gordon, who is a favorite of ours, a jazz trombonist, to the mix. So that will be a crazy, wonderful, fun night. And there will be some performances in what we're calling the Strauss Hall. We're going to have Club Hancher events in there. There's a bluegrass and country artist, Lori Lewis, and the Right Hands, Fred Hirsch Trio, which is a jazz ensemble. And then we're going to have several performances for young audiences. This is the Puppet State Theater of Scotland. And it's the piece, it's called The Man Who Planted Trees. And I wanted to mention, too, David Sanborn. David Sanborn is a jazz saxophonist, and he's going to be joined, this is pretty exciting, by members of the U of I jazz program from years ago. So these are alumni. And then Chucho Valdez, who plays the piano from Cuba, and Joe Lovano on saxophone will be joined by a Cuban band. And so that will be a night of great music. We're having a dance evening with Jessica Lang. Jessica Lang, her program includes a collaboration with the architect Stephen Hall, who has designed a couple buildings here on the University of Iowa campus. And Kyle Abraham, he's a modern dance company that is going to do a wonderful evening of dance. Circus Oz, an Australian circus. And Mark Bamuthi Joseph, this is a piece called Pelota. So how do you get tickets? Donors will have the first chance to get tickets. They have their brochures now. They will have the opportunity to purchase seats before the general public on June 10th. Tickets will be available to the general public. Can either stop by the box office, go on the website. The web address is hancher.uiowa.edu. Call the 1-800-HANCHER number. And really, it's going to be a year-long celebration. I just see with all these performances, just ways that we can really bring everybody together and find ways to all be happy to be back into Hancher again.
Hancher's Executive Director, Chuck Swanson. Be sure to check out all the outstanding new Artist Series seasons being announced all across the state. Just ahead, you'll hear the inside scoop on the WCF Symphony's 2016-17 concert lineup. You'll see new Red Cedar Chamber musicians taking over the reins. You'll discover details about the Des Moines Metro Opera's summer season. You'll hear about musicians from around the globe heading to Iowa for the 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition. And you'll learn about UNI Suzuki School as they celebrate their 40th anniversary. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase.
One thing that makes us unique is that we have a community of families. Some of them come as with their children at age 3 and may stay with us until that child graduates from high school. That's different than their public school experience. That's different than their swimming team experience or their soccer experience. It's a long-term commitment. And some families are so enamored with our process and enjoy what it does for their family that they enroll more than one child in the program. So here we have families carting their students to our school multiple times a week to make sure they get in their group lesson and their individual lesson, or maybe they're in orchestra or one of the chamber groups. And that kind of commitment is amazing. And I'm always just loving our families for making that leap and making that commitment, because the rewards of it are unseen to them when they start. They don't know what's going to happen when their child turns 16 or graduates from college, but they can connect it in many ways to that decision to start when the child was young and to do the hard work and get through all the lessons and the practices and the trials and tribulations of being a music parent. It's amazing where our students have ended up.
It's a very different experience than what you'd get going to another place for music lessons. We're like a big family. The students support one another and the teachers support one another, and it's a great environment to be able to be involved with as, you know, a teacher. I'm also a Suzuki parent as well, so I kind of see different angles there.
University of Northern Iowa Suzuki School Coordinator Kathy Craig and UNI Suzuki School Director Suzanne Bullard. Suzanne and Kathy, along with 8 other teachers, wrangle over 150 students between the ages of 3 and up. In addition to lessons, the school sponsors solo recitals and hosts the Northern Iowa Junior Orchestra, the Northern Iowa Youth Orchestra, Verissimo Chamber Music, Cello Choir, Fiddlesticks, several string quartets, and the Cedar Falls Community Orchestra for Adults. Kathy shares a bit of history on how the UNI Suzuki School began.
The school was founded in 1976 by viola instructor and theory instructor Martha Holvick at the University of Northern Iowa. She had heard about the Suzuki method and had seen some performances, and she thought, well, let's try that here. So she started with a student that grew to a couple more students, and pretty soon it grew into what we have today.
And it sort of started out as a class about the Suzuki method.
Yes, it did.
Not so much about teaching, but more about the method of teaching.
Correct. But then they needed students to demonstrate that method. So, and the lab school in the School of Music was born.
And Martha was such a wonderful person.
Yes, and she was able to mentor in a strong way with a gentle voice. And it was powerful. Kind and generous, knowledgeable, enthusiastic. She was just wonderful.
Martha Holvick led the Suzuki program until she retired as UNI's assistant professor of viola and theory in 1986. Suzanne fills us in on some of the key ideas behind Dr. Suzuki's inspired teaching techniques.
The main philosophy in the Suzuki method is the belief that all children have the ability to learn, and that talent is not something that's inherent, but it's something that can be developed through education and study of an instrument or instruments. And there's, of course, the belief that we start the children as early as possible. There's the philosophy of the mother tongue method, which Dr. Suzuki discovered through his travels, that all children grow up learning the language of their home country easily. And so the idea of the mother tongue approach in music is that children learn by first listening and then imitating and then repeating over and over until it becomes just a part of them, just the way you would learn to speak. We also encourage cooperation. It's a very collaborative setting. Our students learn not only in individual lesson settings, but also with groups and chamber music and orchestra and all of that. And they're learning from one another, and they look up to one another, and they encourage each other to try their best. And the younger students are able to see what the older students have accomplished, and the older students can look back and feel like they're role models for the younger students.
So when you say younger, you mean really young students.
Yeah.
And one of the key factors in this, and you kind of implied that, is that the parent or parents had to be really involved.
Exactly. We have what we call the Suzuki Triangle, which is the student-teacher-parent relationship. The teacher teaches the child at lesson and group class, and then the parent is the home teacher and reinforces everything that the child is learning and actually learns a lot along with the child, especially at the beginning stages, so that that can be in the environment at home. We have students as young as 3 years old in our program on pretty much every instrument that we teach.
The UNI Suzuki School's 40th anniversary celebrations will continue during their annual spring concert.
It's a lot of fun. We are able to get basically the entire school up on stage at the end to play our big finale, and then prior to that, each instrument group will have a chance to perform. So, for example, with the violin students, they start off with the oldest students on stage playing the most advanced pieces, and then they progress down through the literature until we have just an enormous amount of students on stage at once. Each instrument group gets a chance to perform, you know, individually. And at the end, there's the finale. And this year, we have some special things going on. Our longtime teacher, Teresa Fetter, is retiring at the end of this year, and so we have some things to honor her as well.
How can folks get more details about your May 15th concert and more information about the UNI Suzuki School?
Well, they can email the school, and our school email address is kathy.craig@uni.edu, and we have a website embedded in the School of Music websites and university system of websites.
The UNI Suzuki School's annual spring concert will be held on May 15th at 4 p.m. at UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. This concert is free and open to the public. Don't go away. You'll hear how the founders of the Red Cedar Chamber have retired from leadership, but not from the concert stage. You'll catch details about the Des Moines Metro Opera's approaching festival season, featuring three main stage productions and a bevy of other fun activities. You'll discover the amazing talent pool heading to Iowa for the 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition, and you'll find out about the WCF Symphony's upcoming new concert season. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. The WCF has a doubly good new season planned for next year. The artistic director and conductor of the WCF Symphony, Jason Weinberger.
This coming season, we will have two performances at the River Loop Amphitheater. We'll have two performances on two different weekends of the Brown Derby concert. So four total concerts, two different programs. And then, of course, our series at Gallagher and a few other community events. So the only concerts next year where we're kind of, you know, not really repeating music, but that are linked, are our two Brown Derby concerts. And those are going to happen in October and February of this coming season. And we're going to be focusing on the four seasons. And in the fall of 2016, we'll present two movements from Vivaldi's Four Seasons, as well as the two corresponding movements from Max Richter's The Four Seasons Recomposed, which was just written a couple years ago. Then in the winter, we come back with the other two movements from both pieces, so that in the fall you're going to hear some music about summer and fall, and in the winter you're going to hear some music about winter and spring. And it'll be really neat to pair those contemporary and the originals together, and also to feature these incredible violinists. Two of them are our very own, Anita Tucker and Beth Hoffman, and two of them, Ross Winter and Scott Conkling, are guest violinists, both faculty, one here, Ross, at the University of Northern Iowa, and Scott at the University of Iowa. So a really neat program at the Brown Derby, and we're excited to double up on those. And while we're in Waterloo, I'll highlight the River Loop concerts. We begin our season in September with a celebration of the Waterloo Community Playhouse 100th anniversary. So we're going to collaborate with some of their artists on a Broadway program that opens our season. It's going to feature some great orchestral music from Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Story, The Music Man, vocals from Carousel, Fair Lady. I mean, just great stuff. You know, people love this music. In this setting, it should be just delightful. What a great way to celebrate the Waterloo Community Playhouse. And then, in the second half of the year, in June, we return to River Loop for a concert focused on the environment. And that concert will feature an environmental expo and music that looks at how humans have operated sort of in the frame of the natural world. And it will feature a wonderful flute duo called Zawa playing a piece that was written for them called Winds of Change, a beautiful, very stirring work. We'll also play music by Antonin Dvorak and Aaron Copland on that program. So those are our Waterloo concerts. We're really excited about them for next year.
And then you're going to head to Harry Potter Land.
Well, we had a very successful event last year with the music of John Williams, of course, from Star Wars. And one of the things we heard on that concert was that people loved the classical music, so-called classical music, on the concert as much as they enjoyed the John Williams. And that's not easy when you're going up against the Imperial March or, you know, the main theme from Star Wars. You know, those are pretty well loved. And here you have people going, I might have liked the Holst better. So we wanted to dip into that again because we feel that what happens with these concerts is that people, of course, come because they're familiar with Harry Potter, but they're hearing very high-quality music, which is John Williams' music, and we're taking the time to prepare that music the same way that we prepare Mahler or Stravinsky, whatever. But what ends up happening is that people realize that this music by Bartok and Tchaikovsky and Grieg is as vivid, if not more exciting, than even the music by John Williams, and they begin to really fall in love with some of these pieces that they may not be familiar with. So this concert is a wonderful opportunity for us to do that, but we are adding something new, which is a world premiere. And we're really excited to present this piece by Paul Preisbrenner, who's an Iowa-based composer. He was the winner of a composition competition. And he's going to write a new work specifically around this theme of magic and sorcery that will go along with the music that's on the program. It should be a wonderful event at the Gallagher in October and awesome music to play.
And you're going to do some other unusual concerts following that up in November and December.
Yeah, we do have another concert in the Gallagher at the end of 2016, and that is a special new Nutcracker featuring the artwork of Gary Kelly. We're going to be performing Duke Ellington's Nutcracker, and Gary Kelly is illustrating this in his inimitable fashion. And we're also featuring some student groups performing jazz-themed, jazz-styled holiday music. We have a little bit of holiday music going on in November as well. We're going to do a concert at Nazareth here in Cedar Falls, a beautiful church, and it's going to be featuring brass music, both regular secular brass music as well as stuff for the holidays. And that group will also appear at our Cedar Valley Christmas collaboration with the Boys and Girls Club. So there in November and December, we've got a bunch of variety going on before the second half of the year we return to Gallagher for a couple, I guess I would call, more normal classical concerts.
And Project Trio is coming back, which they are phenomenal.
Yeah, Project Trio will appear on one of those concerts. So in the spring, they're back with us again after making a huge splash last time they were here. They're going to be doing all kinds of great community activities. And we're also premiering the new concerto that was just written for them by Adam Schoenberg, whose composition opened the last program we did with Project Trio. So more music by this incredible young American composer. More thrilling performances by this amazing group, Project Trio. They're going to be doing the new piece as well as some surprises. And the orchestra is going to be performing two amazing American works, Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland, and a work called The White Peacock by a composer named Charles Griffiths. It's a wonderful sort of Debussy-influenced, impressionist American work. Pairs beautifully with Appalachian Spring. And all of those pieces will also be the focus of our youth concerts next year. So a lot of kids in the Cedar Valley are going to be learning about Copland and getting to experience Project Trio in addition to our audiences. And then just a couple weeks after that, we have a wonderful pianist coming named Rachel Kudo. And this is a concert that on the surface, again, looks kind of like a traditional classical concert. Features some piano music by both Schumanns, Robert and Clara Schumann, and a symphony by Brahms. But all of this music was chosen to tell the story of Clara Schumann as a performer, as a composer, and as an inspiration to various men with whom she was involved, including her husband Robert, including Johannes Brahms, with whom she had a lifelong, very interesting relationship, and also music by her lover, a guy named Theodor Kirchner, who is almost never talked about in the story of Schumann and Brahms, but was an integral part of the story and actually wrote some really nice music that we're going to present. So Rachel is someone who's performed quite a bit of Clara Schumann's music, and she has a couple special surprises up her sleeve as well for that week. So it should be a wonderful concert for people who love romantic music, but also want to get a little deeper into the romance that these actual people had in the middle of the 19th century. It's a great human story. It's a wonderful way to encapsulate some of the passion of the music with a biographical element too.
How can folks get more details, get tickets, find out more about this incredible season?
Well, all of these concerts are now up on our website, and folks can get more information there. We have a beautiful season brochure. You can call our office if you want to get one in the mail. We have a brand new community engagement group. It's called Upbeat, and it's actually building on the tradition of our Friends organization, but we've kind of refashioned that into this new Upbeat group. And if you join Upbeat, which is a $10 membership fee for a whole year of various benefits, you also get to purchase tickets now. And then the tickets for all these concerts will go on sale to the general public starting on June 6th. So drop by our website, wcfsymphony.org, or our social media spots with our Brown Derby concerts and a few other things we're doing. Those are selling out now routinely in the summer. So if you want guaranteed tickets, this is the way to go.
The artistic director and conductor of the WCF Symphony, Jason Weinberger. Just ahead, we'll hear about the talented young singers who will star in the Des Moines Metro Opera Summer Festival. We'll discover how 35 pianists will perform on three concert grands at the 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition. And we'll give a standing ovation to Jan Boland and John Dowdle as they pass the Red Cedar Chamber Music Management torch on to another amazing musical couple. This is the iWard Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. For 20 years, the Red Cedar Chamber Music Ensemble has been led by a husband and wife who were dedicated to performing classical music they commissioned in smaller rural venues. Now, they are leaving the musical organization they founded, but it will continue under new leadership. Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble traveled with the musicians for their final ensemble performances.
Central City is a town with less than 2,000 people near Cedar Rapids. Here in the community center, 50 people are listening to the Red Cedar Chamber Ensemble perform a new piece by Stephen Cohen titled "Curfew Shall Not Ring Tonight." The acoustics here don't favor the flute, violin, guitar, or cello. Something co-founder and classical guitarist of the ensemble, John Dowdle, says is a deliberate choice.
You don't necessarily go to the ideal places, and the audience isn't necessarily behaving in an ideal manner that we would consider appropriate for the concert hall.
Since Dowdle and his wife, flutist Jan Boland, founded the ensemble 20 years ago, they've commissioned 50 works to play in spaces like this. Before that, they were a national touring duo. Boland says when they started playing together in the 1980s, she didn't think small Iowa venues would become such an important part of their career.
What you end up learning is that people are people, and our audiences are just as dear to our hearts as those occasions where we're playing on the coasts or in Europe. It's turned out to be a wonderful part of what we're doing as Red Cedar.
Every year they perform a season of music in around 24 venues. Boland and Dowdle like the intimacy of small spaces, but they also like formal music venues like the main stage at CSPS Hall in Cedar Rapids. Last Saturday night, 200 people watched Dowdle and Boland play their last full concert as members and leaders of the Red Cedar Chamber Ensemble. Dowdle says they like what they've done, but they've always known the ensemble's long-term success would depend on other people.
To pass this organization on, we not only had to be at a point where we were thinking it's time for us to move on, we had to find the perfect fit.
And they found it with violinist Mira Kim and cellist Carrie Boston. The married couple has been playing with Red Cedar for a decade. After the final concert during a reception, the four musicians publicly transfer leadership. Kim and Boston thank their predecessors.
The way this has been presented to us is well done and just as beautifully conceived as every concert I've ever played with them and every event. And for that, we can't thank you enough.
The two have spent much of this year getting their debut 2017 season ready as leaders. Mira Kim says the core of this group will be the same, but there will be changes.
Carrie's a cellist, I'm a violinist, so the first concert of the season will be just featuring ourselves as a duo. We're calling it It's a String Thing. And one thing we're very happy about is we'll be bringing some main stage concerts to Iowa City.
As for the now former leaders Dowdle and Boland, they plan to return to their roots and tour as a duo. For Iowa Public Radio Classical, I'm John Pimble.
Don't go away. You'll hear how two dedicated pianists and 88 Keys are involved in this year's Midwest International Piano Competition. And you'll discover why the Des Moines Metro Opera brings in accolades and audiences from all across the globe. I'm Jacqueline Hall Bloom. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
We have three wonderful shows this season on our main stage. They all have interesting literary pedigrees. Each one of them comes from a book or a mythic source that was then set to an opera. Our first opera, we open the season with Verdi's Falstaff, and what a remarkable piece.
Michael Eagle, the Des Moines Metro Opera's general and artistic director. The Des Moines Metro Opera marks the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death this season with an opera by Verdi. Verdi lived over 80 years, and in addition to composing dozens of serious opera masterpieces like Aida, La Traviata, and Rigoletto, he was also involved in the unification of Italy, even serving as a senator. Following his retirement in the last years of his life, he decided to try his hand at writing a comedy.
With one of the greatest romps in all of operatic history, based on the rascally, scalawag, robust knight Falstaff from episodes in various Shakespeare plays, who thinks quite highly of his own ability to attract the ladies and probably overextends himself in his invitations to various suitors. And what results is a hilarious opera.
And one thing I noticed about this, too, is that you have quite an Iowa connection with the singers you have selected for this performance.
Yes, Wayne Tigges is a bass baritone who grew up actually in eastern Iowa, went to Iowa State University, and has gone on. He went through some of the most significant programs in our country for development with the Lyric Opera Chicago, for example, and has really charted out in what amounts to an international career.
And then the role of the doctor is also taken by another Iowan.
Right, Chris Carr is a young man who used to be a baritone, making the transition up to being a tenor, and we're thrilled to have him give it a try here this summer as Dr. Cayuse in Falstaff.
And who's directing and who's conducting?
Our conductor will be David Neely, and our director is Tomer Zvulin, who is the general director of the Atlanta Opera, a brilliant director, extremely high regarded, I think one of the rapidly rising stars in the directorial production concept kind of world in opera. And so we're thrilled to have him here to present a vigorous and very vital kind of new take on an old classic.
The Des Moines Metro Opera's second main stage production this summer is Massenet's great opera from the late 19th century, Manon. Manon is not often performed due to its difficulty. It's the story of a young French woman from the 18th century who struggles between choosing a life with her true love or following the path of life's luxurious temptations.
Which means you have to create a very opulent world. So we have secured costumes from Opera Australia, glorious 18th century costumes of vibrant colors that will really make this tale come to life. So we're thrilled about that. And of course, we'll have brand new scenery and other elements of the production to go with it. So it promises to be a really beautiful affair. And our new production will be led by Christine McIntyre and David Neely as conductor. And Jules Massenet is really an interesting composer, kind of an undersung composer, I think. We oftentimes refer to him as the last flowering drawing of French Romanticism, and Manon is his greatest work based on the 18th century novel, which was kind of set up as a cautionary tale for young women. And it's a coveted role for young sopranos to sing the title role of Manon. It's a gorgeous role with beautiful music and a lot of character development and character arc to portray through the music. And I'm thrilled that we have Sidney Moncasola to come back to us to sing this role. Sidney is a rising young soprano who has won just about every major American competition that there is to win for a young singer, including Metropolitan Opera Grand Prize winner a few seasons ago, amongst dozens of others. And I know she'll be glorious in the role. Joseph Dennis, also a young tenor who sang with us in Yennefer, was a big hit.
And then also her cousin and the Count. You have some interesting singers there as well.
Yeah, Michael Adams, another young American baritone who was actually setting out to be a baseball player and decided to be an opera singer instead. We're looking forward to his debut, and a young baritone named Troy Cook, who will sing the role of de Brétigny, the nobleman who presents the opposite side of the coin to Manon of a life of luxury and opulence that she has to make her choice between. I'm thrilled about this young cast and how wonderful they'll be. It was a real treat for us to have emerging singers of this international caliber with us this summer for Des Moines Metro Opera's productions.
And your third opera is very unusual. Tell us about this choice.
I can't wait for this production. It's Gluck's Orphée et Eurydice, and it's based on the Greek myth of Orpheus. Orpheus was the Greek god of music who had such a beautiful singing voice that he could charm the angels and the demons and the mortals. And those who know their Greek myths know that Orphée loved his wife, Orpheus in the Greek, loved his wife Eurydice very, very much. She was bitten on the ankle by a snake and taken down to the underworld. And Orpheus was so forlorn that he journeyed to the underworld and entreated Pluto with his songs and with his playing on his lyre that he had no choice but to give him back his wife on the condition that as they journeyed back to the earth, he could not turn to look to her or speak to her. Well, she was so forlorn that he was ignoring her, she couldn't help but just beg and plead. And so at one point he turns around and she falls dead, and the Greek myth ends tragically, and Orpheus laments his own mistake until his singing becomes so sad he's torn apart by the Furies. And Gluck really revolutionized things in 1762 when he wrote this opera, Orfeo ed Eurydice, which is the Italian title of it. And then he moved to Paris. He wrote it originally for castrato, and those were falling out of fashion, and of course we don't have them today, certainly. And so when he moved to Paris, he remodeled the opera a little bit and rewrote the title role of Orpheus, which becomes Orphée in the French, said it in the French language, and wrote it for a mezzo-soprano to do what we oftentimes have in opera, which is a lower-voiced woman, a mezzo-soprano, playing the part of a young man in trousers. We call them trouser roles. And so we have that convention in this opera. There are all kinds of choices to make when one decides to do this opera. We've elected to do the version with the mezzo, as I say, and we've elected to use a version that was reworked in the 19th century by the French composer Hector Berlioz. And maybe the most beautiful piece from the opera, the most recognizable piece, is called The Dance of the Blessed Spirits. And if you want to take a sampling of a piece of music from this opera, that's where you should begin. You'll recognize it almost immediately. And in this time period when Gluck wrote this opera, you couldn't have a sad ending. If people behaved well and they behaved morally, they had to have a happy ending. And so in comes the third character in this opera. There's three characters, Amore, or Cupid, who comes in and kind of saves the day and brings her back to life and rewards Orpheus for his good deeds. And so this Age of Enlightenment kind of piece puts its own stamp on the Greek tragedy by putting a happy ending on the tale so that people who do good are rewarded in the end with happiness. And we have three wonderful singers. Jennifer Johnson Cano makes her company debut in the title role, and she's a terrific mezzo-soprano, I think. Looking very much forward to having her with us. Her audition for us last year for this role was really breathtaking, so I knew that was the person that I had to have for this part. A young soprano named Susanna Biller, fresh from the San Francisco Opera and the San Diego Opera, is singing the soprano role of Eurydice, and a young lady named Cree Carrico is singing the role of Amor. So we're very excited about that. And we have launched our Second Stages series, which presents operas in unique and rare spaces around the community. This season, our second stage of series takes us to the Science Center of Iowa, where we will be in the principal theater there in the Black Box doing our first Philip Glass opera called Galileo Galilei, based on the Renaissance era scientist who faced persecution at the hands of the church based on his assertion that the world is flat, amongst other things. And the opera tells the tale of Galileo's life, but it wouldn't be Philip Glass if it was done conventionally. So we start backwards. We start with Galileo as an old man, and through the course of this one-act opera, Galileo gets younger and younger until he finishes the opera as a young boy. It's a very remarkable and interesting opera that was premiered in 2002, and we're thrilled to present it as part of our Second Stages series. The production in the Science Center will make extended use of astrological projections. And if ticket buyers would like to come an hour early, the performances start at 7 and 9 p.m. on July 7th and July 10th are at 7 p.m. But an hour prior to every performance, the Science Center will host a talk about Galileo called Galileo's Telescope in their new Star Theater Planetarium, which has recently reopened and been remodeled. The folks at the Science Center tell me that you'll be able to look at the domed ceiling and you can see what the stars were like, what the sky looked like the night that Galileo might be looking at his telescope back in the Renaissance.
Very cool. And you also are using a lot of the singers that you have in your other productions will be performing in this as well.
Right. Chris Carr will sing the role of the older Galileo, and Troy Cook will sing the role of the younger Galileo. Interesting that the older Galileo sung by a tenor and the younger one by baritone. His voice gets lower as he gets younger, I guess. And then numerous other singers, both principal singers and members of our apprentice program, will round out a very large cast of characters in this tale.
So just outline some of the extra events that you also have going on.
On June 2nd, we're presenting an evening called Undressing the 18th Century at 7 p.m. at the World Food Prize, in which we'll talk about the clothes from Manon. People will be able to see these costumes from Opera Australia, and just a background on why people dressed the way they did with the big dresses and the waistcoats and that sort of thing in the time period, and have some demonstrations on how they got dressed, how that worked, what these costumes look like. So we think that'll be a really fun event. And then on July 9th, we will have an event at Salisbury House and Gardens called Reflections on Orpheus, in which people can learn more about the Greek myth that inspires that tale, and also about the opera, since it's new territory for us dramatically and musically. We wanted to have an opportunity for people to learn about that, so we're thrilled to present that. On June 16th and 18th, we do our family opera adventure called Peanut Butter and Puccini, in which you can bring children to the opera house. There's a short performance and a tour of the costume shop and the backstage area. Very popular event, so if you've not been and you have young people in your life, it's a great thing to bring them to have them experience the goings-on behind the scenes at the opera. And we also have our Threads and Trills costume luncheon on June 11th, which focuses on all three shows, and you get to hear music and have lunch at the Embassy Club West. And the Stars of Tomorrow concert is very popular. It's one of our insiders' favorite kind of events, and that's on July 13th at 7 p.m. at Cheslow Auditorium at Drake University. It's a chance for you to hear all 40 of our apprentice artists with the festival orchestra presenting some of the greatest tunes of the operatic canon with orchestra, and then a reception afterwards. And one of my favorite events of the season is our annual Death by Aria event, which happens this year on May 28th at 6:30 p.m. at the Blank Performing Arts Center. We spend a lot of time hearing auditions and applicants. We have over 1,000 applicants this year from across the nation for our apprentice artist program. And we select 40 young singers to come every year. They have the pride of place of singing the first notes of music of our season at Death by Aria. Each of them sings an aria. musically kind of introduces themselves to the festival staff. And we open that up to the public. It's free of charge, and people are welcome to come. It's called Death by Aria, not because we think that the audience members will die by sitting there listening to 40 arias, but because it's very nerve-wracking for the young singers, and it's quite a remarkable thing. The Metropolitan Opera always sends out a talent scout to that event, and if your listeners are interested, we'd love to welcome them to that. They don't have to stay for the whole thing. That's the beauty of it. You can come and listen to the first 10 arias, or you can stay for all 40.
And how do folks get more details and tickets?
They can always visit our website, DesMoinesMetroOpera.org. There's a great deal of information there about our main stage performances, as well as special events and how to get tickets. They can certainly phone our box office at 515-961-6221 for more details. And we're always welcoming new people, people who may never have been. This is a great season to come.
Michael Eagle, the Des Moines Metro Opera's General and Artistic Director. You don't want to miss a note of the DMMO. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Just ahead, the 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition team is gearing up for this year's world-class contest.
First year, when we had this competition, we had a total of 33 applications. This year, we had 94. So that required us to stay several nights, up to 4 in the morning, listening to a lot of these people's auditions. And that was quite a big difference. So that's where it started. We were really, really pleased, of course, with this turnout. And so far, if I remember correctly, 27 countries were represented from 94 applicants, and what we've selected represents 12 countries.
Compared to the 2 years ago, I mean, boy, it was a lot more work this time, but in a good way, and it's just a thrill for us to have this many, and we can only imagine, I mean, if this number doubles in 2 years down the road, we might need some extra help.
We're thrilled to see all the talent be here in Cedar Falls for that whole week during the competition. And of course, we're beside ourselves about being able to participate and perform. So very excited having this come up and can't wait to see what we're going to play.
The University of Northern Iowa's associate professors of piano, Dmitry Vorobyev and Sean Botkin. They are also the co-founders and co-artistic directors of UNI's Midwest International Piano Competition. Dmitry and Sean were joined by the WCF Symphony's conductor, Jason Weinberger. The competition will include the WCF Symphony performing a concerto with each of this year's 3 senior finalists. 2016 marks the second Midwest International Piano Competition to be held this summer in June. Contestants had to upload their video recordings onto YouTube. There were different musical requirements for junior and senior applicants.
For juniors, they had to do etude, they had to do a movement of a classical sonata, and I think they had to do a free choice piece, whichever they wanted. For seniors, they had to do Prelude and Fugue by Bach, 2 contrasting movements of a classical sonata, Chopin etude, and a free choice piece.
And how about the caliber of the YouTube videos?
Oh, all of them are quite good. I mean, there were some various degrees of quality of recordings, and some of the pianos that contestants had to play on were maybe not the nicest of instruments, but overall, a really high level of playing. So it's great to see that piano music is still thriving.
Now, you're talking about the quality of instruments, and this year, you've actually got an extra instrument that the competitors can choose from when they do their competition.
Yes, we have the Steinway that's housed in the Great Hall of the Performing Arts Center. That's one of the choices that they can play on. But we also have another Steinway that's being delivered from West Music, as well as a Yamaha Concert Grand, which was supposed to happen 2 years ago, so we're really happy that we get to have the Yamaha this time around. So we'll have three pianos for the competitors to make their piano selection.
Now, you have great pianos, and you also have fantastic judges. Tell us about this year's judges that will be judging this competition.
One of the judges is Eric Larson, who is on the faculty of the North Carolina School of the Arts, the man who is basically responsible for bringing me to this country, the fantastic musician. He's also the director of a very high-level Meadowmount School of Music, which gave birth to such fantastic musicians as Yo-Yo Ma, Itzhak Perlman. So he's now the director of that, and so he is one of them. And then we have
Craig Shepherd, who's teaching at University of Washington in Seattle. And I've had the pleasure of having some lessons with him quite a number of years ago. But a wonderful American pianist. He took second prize in the Leeds piano competition when Murray Pariah won first prize back in 1971. And they're very good friends. And I just happened to see on Facebook that Murray Pariah performed in the University of Washington just the other night, and I saw pictures of the two of them together. So he will be coming, as well as Nalita True from the Eastman School of Music. And I haven't seen her since I stopped competing, but she basically saw me grow up. I first met her when I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, and she was judging me in festivals and competitions. So she's always kind of been like a piano mom for me. I'm always was very encouraging and gave me lots of wisdom as I was growing up through the years. So we're thrilled to have her as well as the other two.
And she has quite a vita, including studying with Nadia Boulanger.
Yes.
An amazing woman. So an incredible panel of judges. You've got these wonderful pianists coming. You've got these great pianos. So tell us about the festival and the competition.
The most important thing that I have to say is we want audience. We want people to come. We want them to know that all the rounds except the finals are completely free. And I think we would love for people to really come from the preliminary rounds. So you come, you listen to this high level of performers, you find yourself kind of like in the Olympics. You find yourself pulling for certain competitors. And this year, we actually have a few very interesting situations. One, in junior division, there is a brother and sister competing against each other. And I think they're from Canada. And the senior division, I mean, we have lots of really great pianists. One, we just happened to come across his bio yesterday. He self-taught himself until he was in high school. Then he started having more or less of a formal training, but he also graduated from MIT and was called by Business Insider one of the best MIT graduates. So, and he's coming to me, he's a really, really great pianist. I mean, will he win? We don't know. Nobody knows. But it's interesting to see these people who are, I mean, not just a regular path of a lot of these pianists, but, you know, MIT graduate and brother and sister as well. So, I mean, I think people will find that there's a lot of drama in these competitions. You know, in our last interview, Sean said it very well, that sometimes the audience would feel that a certain person has to win. I mean, how could he not, or how could she not? And yet the judges may disagree with that. So it's a very, I mean, I think rewarding experience to listen to the great classical music of a very high quality and really find yourself pulling for certain people and invested in this, I guess.
All of these performances are going to be in the Great Hall of the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. And the finals, which will be on June 11th, this year you're going to do something that's really great. You've expanded the finals. So tell us about this.
June 11th is the finals for the senior category. The finals for the junior category is actually the day before on the 10th. But the 11th for the senior category is extra special for us this year because we have the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony involved, and The finalists will be playing a concerto with the orchestra and Jason Weinberger conducting. And that's something we didn't have 2 years ago. 2 years ago, it was just a one-hour solo recital. I think to have the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony will certainly help attract a lot of people to come because it makes it more exciting, I think. It's not just piano, but it's with orchestra too. So that's a big thing that we're really excited to have involved this year.
So each finalist, and there'll be three finalists, will play a concerto, and do they do something else?
We kept the requirement of an encore. So after they're done with the concerto, they will be required to go back on stage and play an encore. So we kind of wanted to make everyone feel that although this is a competition, it's still like a concert. So they're performing, feeling like the audience is there, and they're called for an encore. There's something unique about this.
Yes, and in the encore, we had a list of 5 or 6 pieces that they had to choose from. So we may have the same encores, who knows, but that's okay. We chose pieces we thought would be nice and pleasing to the ears as an encore piece.
How is it going to be arranged?
For the finals, the schedule would be, we start at 7:30 and we'll have 2 finalists play their concertos, and then there will be an intermission, and we have you and I catering in the lobby for people to have some food and hors d'oeuvres and drinks, and then we'll have the third competitor, after which the jury will need time to deliberate on who the winners are, first, second, and third prize. And I believe catering will be there afterwards too for people to be able to have some food and drinks as well and not just be standing waiting for the award ceremony.
And what do the winners get to take away from this?
The first prize in senior category gets a cash prize of $10,000, a CD recording with a Blue Griffin label, which is a great thing for them. They can promote themselves. And it's one of those necessities in promotion these days. And hopefully they will come back here to do a solo recital. Hopefully that will give them more concerts elsewhere, etc. So that's what they get. And junior division, they simply get a cash prize of $2,500. And again, we look forward to possibly having that prize winner also come back here with a concert.
So how can folks get more information and tickets and all that sort of thing?
Several ways. You can either go to our website to find out more information, which is midwestpianocompetition.com. For tickets, you can call the ticket office directly, 319-273-4TIX.
And with these competitions during the week, the ones that are free, what are the hours of those then?
The schedule is posted on the midwestpianocompetition.com, but it's daily, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 10 o'clock, 2, and 7. So 3 sessions per day. Then on Thursday, there are 2 sessions at 2 and at 7. And on Friday, there are 2 sessions, 2 and 7.
The University of Northern Iowa's Associate Professors of Piano, Dmitry Vorobyev and Sean Botkin. They are also the co-founders and co-artistic directors of UNI's Midwest International Piano Competition. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this show goes to Charles Swanson, Suzanne Bullard, Kathy Craig, Jason Weinberger, John Pimble, Red Cedar Chamber Ensemble, Michael Eagle, Dmitry Vorobyev, and Sean Botkin. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner, Jim Davies, Catherine Perkins, and Phil Moss. Program research was provided by Rachel Berenger. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.